Welcome, NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And we're talking Blues, and this might be it for the St. Louis Blues. I think I had it written off in January when they had their losing streak then, that was the end of the season. Little did I know there'd be a little bit of a revival, but after the start of this road trip in San Jose and in Los Angeles, Nathan, are they, as the kids say, are they cooked?
Oh, you're breaking out the Gen Z slang. I like that. You know, I don't entirely know what cooked means. That's a thing my son says, but it does seem like they are what I think cooked means. You know,
does your son think that the Blues are cooked?
My son doesn't watch hockey. He doesn't like. I think hockey scares him. To be honest with you, it's he's seven, right? So it's too fast, and when the fights break out, he's not interested. But you know, the last time you and I talked, Matt, you were talking about how the Blues were just dead in the water, and I kind of gave you a little, and you know, and they did. They looked good for a minute.
Props to you for that.
I feel good about that exchange. I don't hit very often on the podcast scene, but I felt good about that one, so I just wanted to call back to it. You know,
yeah. Yeah, and you know, this was kind of a make or break road trip that the Blues had coming up. You know, they had put themselves in a position to play meaningful hockey games, and that wasn't something that we anticipated around the trade deadline when they trade Shen, they trade Falk, they bring up Stember, they bring up Lindstein. We didn't really think that they would be in this sort of position, but after coming back from the break, they came back and they were 11-2-2. They put themselves 4 points out of a playoff spot with two games in hand. So essentially, if you win those two games in hand, you're in a playoff spot. So they were right there in San Jose on Monday, lose a heartbreaker in the last minute of the game. Adam Gaudette scores, squeaks it through Joel Hofer, and they don't even pick up a point in regulation. And then on Wednesday night against the Kings in Los Angeles, lose in overtime. And really, you get 1 point out of those two games, and it's just not enough at this point in the season.
Well, and you talked about it, and you wrote about it, but also the Blues knew, you know, Blues players, Blues staff, coaches, everybody knew this was, you know, make or break, I think might be underselling it. You know, these are the kinds of moments when team seasons are made. You know, big road trip, you're on the cusp of a playoff spot while also being on the cusp of a lottery pick, you know. So I think that they knew going in what they needed to do. And, you know, I think it didn't happen, right? But I think you saw that fight. I mean, both games were great games. I mean, you know, it's one goal in San Jose, you know, in the last 30 seconds. It's over to, or what, minute and 30 seconds or something like that. The Kings game went to OT, you know. I mean, so they're fighting. I mean, they're still fighting. It's not like this 11-2-2 stretch is all for naught and suddenly they're 0-5 and, you know, this is the Blues that we saw in, you know, October again, right? Like, so there's some, I don't know, silver lining to it. You know, the run is over. The playoff odds are diminishing by the second, right? But they still look pretty good in the losses, I felt like.
Yeah, so the playoff odds, I track them daily throughout the entire season. It's I look at HockeyViz and Money Puck and The Athletic, the people who do the playoff odds, and I look at them pretty much every day. At one point, Money Puck had the Blues at 12.65%. That was entering March 30, which was before the game in San Jose. So pre-game in San Jose, about 1-8, right? Which is a far cry from where they were at the break.
Yeah.
At the break, you hear the numbers at the break, right? HockeyViz had him at 0.4%. The Athletic had him at 0.6%. And Money Puck had them at 0.16%.
Yeah.
So for all intents and purposes, that's zero. Like that's looking at it saying,
it's never zero till it's zero, baby.
That's 99.84% that Money Puck had them missing the playoffs. And, you know, he got up to 12.5 roughly before the Sharks game. And then, you know, after.
Hit us with it. How low is it now?
This Money Puck now has them at. You wanna? Can I get a drum roll, please? While it loads.
I feel like if I do a drum roll, like a drrr, you want one of those? Because like give if I drum roll,
got,
on desk,
give me whatever you got.
You hear my drum roll?
No, we're gonna count it anyways.
Dang it! I got noise suppression on. I'm sorry.
It's at 2.2% for our money putt, which is still higher than I would have anticipated. At the other sites, it's less than 1%. So,
I mean, that's better than I would have thought too. Yeah, I would have guessed less than 1%.
But with 8 games left, that might as well be zero. And Nathan, it's never zero, but it's
no. And you know, last time, like I said, last time we talked, I kind of gave you a little. I'm not gonna give you one of those this time. Yeah, I just you know, there's not enough game. I mean, listen, they close the gap, right? So that, I mean, it feels good, but there's just, you know, two more losses coming out of there with just 1 point across 2 games. What do they got? 8 left. I just you know, it's possible. It's mathematically possible, but man,
correct. Yeah, mathematically possible. As we sit here on Friday morning, the Blues come into the day before they play the Ducks on Friday night. 5 points out of a spot from the Sharks, and they have the same amount of games played. So 5 points in 8 games is a tall task. And I think the other part is not only that they lost these 2 games to begin the road trip, but it was who they lost them to. Like San Jose is in the fight right now. Los Angeles is in the fight. I believe that it's Nashville that they played the Kings last night. They beat them in a shootout, but I believe Nashville had at one point 2 games left against the Kings and 2 games left against the Sharks. So like, that's a lot of points that will be guaranteed between teams that are ahead of the Blues, that's just not how they would have liked that. Those 2 games to go if they're going to make a true run at this, which if they had won those 2 games, they would have been in a playoff position because of the way the schedule worked and because of how many points they would have had. Like, it would have been making things very interesting down the stretch here. But now you look at their schedule and they have Anaheim, who, you know, we can call them a division leader, which technically they are, but it's not your traditional division leader.
Technically is all that matters. If you're a division leader, you're a division, you know, it's like zero. It's never zero till it's zero. You're a division leader.
Sure.
Till you ain't,
yeah. Maybe. But let me just, Colorado leading the Central at 108, Carolina leading the Metro at 102, Tampa and Buffalo with the Atlantic at 100. And then Anaheim's at 87 leading the Pacific. So Anaheim, technically a division leader, and then they have the Blues do. They have games against Colorado in Colorado on Sunday, at home against the Avalanche on Tuesday. So those are games that they're going to be tough to win, and they didn't really have too much of a margin for error, and they kind of spent it in these last 2 games. So, you know, this run, I'm sure it was fun for the players to kind of get some feeling back. I mean, when I talked to Jake Neighbors on Sunday before they left, he's like, yeah, it was kind of in disbelief about where we were and what we were able to do and kind of how important these games have become. And I think I wouldn't say that they played any different in those 2 games, or that they were, like you said, that they didn't lose because they weren't hungry, right? But it was to kick in the pants when you see how they lost that game in San Jose and then the one in LA too.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, you talked about margin for error. You know, you could have handled 2 losses in this run, you know, if they were these games coming up against the Avalanche. You know, those are games that, you know, the Avalanche aren't quite on the heater they were to start the season, but are still incredible, you know, all-timer team at this point. And I think that, you know, you could have gone in. I'm not saying you don't go in expecting to lose a game, right? But you could have handled those blows. But a couple more of those coming up after these 2, yeah, it's going to be pretty rough. You know, the nice thing is, and you know, you talked about it being fun for the guys on the team. You know, it's fun for fans too. I mean, you know, before we started recording here, I was lamenting having to learn more players because they're not in the top 2, you know, in draft lottery odds anymore. But like, it's been really fun hockey. You know, Montgomery has talked about, Jim Montgomery's talked about, you know, the identity and getting that going. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about identity in hockey and having that, but it kind of felt like they had one there for a little bit and still did, even in these two losses. So, you know, it's kind of the same situation, but maybe a little further down than last year, right? Where you go on this run after maybe a not great season or maybe a worse season when it comes to to this year. But you go on that little run, you have a little fun, and then you have some optimism for next year. So, you know, the only thing I hope is that that this run and if it continues after this little bump in the road here, these 2-4 games, if they finish strong the last 4-6 games of the season, I just hope it doesn't lead to the same kind of bump we saw this year where we came in and expectations were really high and then cratered almost instantly.
Yeah. And I think bringing up last year, it's a good point because I do think that there are distinctions to draw between last year and this year. Like this year, I don't want to say it's entirely goaltending based, but it's a lot of it. A lot of it. Like Joel Hofer and Jordan Binnington have been the best goaltending duo in the league since the break. Like I think I looked it up yesterday, their save percentage was like 937, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's like insane.
Unreal.
Particularly, that's since the break?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And like that is an insane number to think about in a year in which, you know, the average is 890. Like the average save percentage across the entire league is 890. And that also used to be a crazy number. If you saw 890, you better run from that goalie. But now it's scoring's up and shooters are good. So the goaltending that the Blues have received has been incredible. And really Joel Hofer, since the beginning of November, we've talked about it a few times on here. He's been one of the best goalies in the league. I believe he's second in save percentage and third or fourth in goals against average since the start of November. So for him, it's not just like a month and a half. It's basically throw out his three horrible starts in October. And since then he's been lights out. And I think that's different from last year in terms of overall team play. Like I think last year you saw one of the best defenses in the league. Like if you looked at the underlying numbers and shots allowed, shot attempts allowed, expected goals, scoring chance, all of those things, they were probably a top five, maybe even top three defense in the league last year, pretty much since Montgomery took over. And this year, those numbers were slightly above average before the break. They were probably, you know, 10 to 14 in different categories. And they've been higher up since the break in those categories, but it's not to the level where you would expect them to be posting the defensive numbers that they have because of their superb goaltending. So I think last year I looked at the run, and yes, they were getting good goaltending. They had a higher shooting percentage than pretty much every other team. So like they had those things that fluctuate from time to time, but you saw the underlying numbers and you did believe that maybe that could be continued. This year, I think I looked at this run and the fact that the goaltending is leading it, it doesn't give me a ton of carryover into next year, other than maybe small things that the coaching staff are looking at, like defending their net front, winning puck battles. Like those are core pieces of an identity that they wanted to establish. And that was something that Jim Montgomery talked about at the break, that, you know, they have to start establishing an identity and get a competitiveness up, get the battle level up so they can build that for the fall. Like that is pretty much the reality of it at the break, that they were playing for the fall really. And, they've discovered some of that, but I think there's still some ways to go until we see what this team can be, just because the goaltending has been papering over a lot of different things.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is you can't expect the goaltending to be this good for any stretch, let alone for, you know, an entire season like you would next year. But you called them, you know, little things, you know, defending your net front and stuff like that. But you know, you go back to October, November, and they weren't doing that at all.
No,
you know,
right. I mean, big things. Yeah, you're right.
They may be little things that, you know, you should be doing and are, you know, maybe common sense or whatever, however you want to say it, but they weren't doing them, you know, so they are now, which is great. You know, so, I mean, you know, will there be a revelation on defense in 2027? No, I can't imagine that's the case. But if they go into the season doing those little things that they didn't do starting this season, maybe next season you're not in a, you know, dozen game hole by the time, you know, the new year rolls around. Yeah, I don't know that we see a major shift, but I think, you know, if you do those little things consistently enough, early enough, we should see a different season than we saw this year.
Yeah, and you know what? It's going to sound crazy, but you could always make the argument that these Blues were closer than it ended up being, right?
I think, like, that's a very easy argument to make, yeah.
You can look back at plenty different games. I think there are six that jump out to me right now. Blowing a 4-goal lead in Detroit.
Specific number. Wow.
Yeah. Well, there's you're gonna. Yeah.
You listen. Yeah. It's not a knock, brother. That's a compliment. That's insane that you're able to just pull six specific games off the top of your head. Like
these ones should be causing pain to the people who listen to it right now. So blowing the 4-goal lead in Detroit. Blowing the 4-goal lead in Nashville. The three games against the Stars where they give up a goal, the game-winning goal in the last 2 minutes of the third period. And then this one in San Jose where the game-winning goal is scored in the last 30 seconds of the third period. And those are six games where they do not get a single point out of them, right? Like, the 4-goal leads, like, you should be getting two, let alone zero.
Right.
And then you want to factor in overtime games as well. They're 4-12 in games decided in an overtime or shootout. 250 win percentage is the worst in the league. And so that's 16 games that went to overtime. Let's say they go 500. Let's say they're league average and they go 500 in those 16 games. They go 8-8. That is an additional 4 points that they would have if they were just an average team in overtime. And so you say, all right, well, 4 points, what does that get you? That gets you 1 point out of a playoff spot right now, not even accounting for those 4-goal leads that they blew, the heartbreakers against the Stars, against the Sharks. Like, I don't want to double count those losses against the Flyers because they were in a shootout in overtime, but those are also like 2-goal games that they blew. So, like, there's a lot of games that you can look at and say, if these ones go different, or if they only split these ones, how different does the season look? And I'm sure it is magnified for us because we follow the Blues, and every team in the league can look at this and say,
yeah,
what if these games had gone differently? But because we are people that cover the Blues, that's how I'm looking at things right now.
I think that's being generous, calling me somebody who covers the Blues. I'm on the podcast with you, but like,
that counts. You know. That counts.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well,
don't give me a, you got it.
You're going to give me a big head. Honestly, I'm going to apply for press credentials soon and see if I can get in the press box with you and just really,
that's right.
Probably just get kicked out of there. If I had to guess, they'd be like, this guy doesn't belong here. We know who that guy is. Get him out of here.
So the other thing that you mentioned earlier that I wanted to kind of bring back up again was the draft, right? And right now the Blues have the fifth worst record in the league, which is remarkable because of how in the playoff conversation they seemed like three days ago. But the West has been so terrible, and there's so many teams still in it in the West that you thought might have been out of it. And so because the Blues are kind of one foot in each side, they haven't really lost position a ton in the draft position in the last week or so. Now, since the break, they absolutely have lost draft position. At the break, they were the second worst record in the NHL, behind only Vancouver. And Vancouver has since rocketed the tank. Other than beating Colorado the other night, they've been... we'll just say bad. We'll just go with bad, Nathan. But they are 16 points worse than the second worst team in the league. Just, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, so the Blues were second worst record in the league at the break. Now they're fifth worst. And to put that in perspective, like what that difference is, Puckpedia has a pick value calculator that basically looks at the history of the draft and who was selected in, at each position, what value they provided in their career, and what that pick is worth on an average basis. And it's not perfect, but it does give a kind of a broad scale view of, you know, the second pick versus the fifth pick, like what is the value difference there? And using this pick value calculator, the second pick would basically be the equivalent of the fifth and the 17th pick. So essentially, if you want to look at it that way, the Blues basically cost themselves a Zach Bolduc or an Adam Juracek with this past run. I mean, those guys were taken in that middle of the first round range. And that is kind of what has happened. That's what's happened in the last month or two. Just from moving 2 to 5, that's the difference in value that that's changed. I mean, yeah, and you know, just for to tie up with loose ends, Juracek was 16 and Bolduc was 17. So that's pretty spot on as to the equivalent of the difference between 2 and 5.
When you put it in those terms, it kind of feels like it's just a much more exciting way to make the kind of trade the Cleveland Browns would make right before draft day. You know, like just giving up good talent to move up, you know, like I don't think the Blues are going to like select Johnny Manziel or anything, you know, at number 5, if that's where they pick. But
oh, I thought you were making a draft day movie like the.
Oh, no. See, because because the Blues. Well, I guess the Blues do have some picks they could trade to make that happen. Yeah.
But I thought you were going to make a Vontae Mack reference. I thought that's where you're going with it.
If I have only prepared for 2 draft picks, I told you this before we started recording. So, like, I could go with the Vontae Mack no matter what type of situation. Yeah. I just don't think that that's going to happen at number 5 if that's where they end up. So,
and here's another way to look at the drop from 2 to 5, right?
So the smile on your face makes me feel like this is going to be really bad and hurtful, and I'm not going to like it.
Maybe. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. They have 3 draft picks this year, right? They have their own, which right now would be 5-ish, depending on what the lottery ends up. They can move up to 1 or 2. They can move down to 6 or 7, depending on the lottery. And they have Detroit's, and the way that the Red Wings are playing right now, they could have missed the playoffs. You know, they're tied right now with Ottawa, but they don't have the regulation wins tiebreaker. So let's say they make the playoffs as one of the last few teams in, and they end up selecting around 18, 17, 18, 19. The drop from 2 to 5 would basically be like giving up that pick.
Cool.
That they got from the Justin Falk trade.
Yeah, I really appreciate when you put things into a perspective that just make me feel worse about things.
Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, the last month and a half has been, I'm sure, fun to watch. I'm sure it's been fun for the players and the coaches
to
play in and coach. But from a broad scale view of things, like 5 doesn't seem that bad. But when you look at what 2 was and what the difference is from 2 to 5, it could be substantial. You know, it's also determined by strength of your scouting staff and what you believe in different players. Like there have been some drafts where the 5th pick is actually better than the 2nd pick, you know, like I can think back to 2017, and this is no knock on Nolan Patrick, who had some injuries to deal with, but he went 2nd overall to the Flyers. And right after him, 3, 4, 5 were Miro Heiskanen to the Stars, Cale Makar to the Colorado Avalanche, and Elias Pettersson to the Vancouver Canucks. So, yes, there are certain instances where the picks behind number 2 end up being better. Like even I think back to the Hughes-Kako draft in 2019. And that was one where Jack Hughes goes one, Kako goes two. And then after that, you know, Moritz Seider goes six. Philip Roper goes eight. Like, these guys have probably had better careers than Kako or Doc, or, you know, so it's not always a perfect system that, you know, five is going to be a worse player than two. But if you're giving me the second pick or you're giving me the fifth pick, I think you know which one I'm taking.
Yeah, every time. You know, one nice thing, one silver lining, you know, to the potential draft slide and significantly worse slide if they were to sneak into the playoffs, is that the last several years, at least, you know, Montgomery kind of seems like he's really hit on draft picks. You know, I think a lot of these guys, you know, several of them certainly are still developing and they haven't gotten to see them yet, but the ones, you know, like Dvorsky has looked fantastic. Snuggerud, I mean, he looked great last year, but has looked even better this year, especially in this run here since Thomas came back, since the Olympic break. But the scouting, the actual selection, you know, has been great. And so, you know, I know it's going to be Steen going forward, but you know, Armstrong will be around. I think he'll be you know, have an influence, and certainly has already had an influence on Steen. So, you know, I don't love the idea of losing a 17th overall pick, right, in the value there between second and fifth. But, you know, I do feel good about Montgomery and Steen being the guys to kind of make the pick and go from there. You know, this, they'll find the value. I feel good about that. I don't feel good about having to research more players because I was locked in on the top two now. That's,
well, just wait till May 5. That's when the draft lottery is. And, if the Blues do move up to one or two, then there you go, Nathan. You'll
then I don't have to do. Listen, that's, you right, just gave me an out to not have to do homework, so I'm all about that.
Yeah, I mean, but they also do have the other two first rounders. So if you want to get deep into the weeds and research the mid teens and the late first round, then go for it, I think.
You know what? I think I might do. I like doing that with other stuff. Maybe it's time for hockey. You know, I mean, I do cover the team now.
Yes,
as
yeah,
you said. So. Yeah. Maybe it's time I know a few things.
Sure. And wanted to get to Jake Neighbors. And he's had a rough go of things since the Olympic break. He's only got 5 points. All of them are assists. His goal drought is now the longest in his NHL career. And up until, I guess it was on last Saturday against the Toronto Maple Leafs, he had 1 point in the 15 games, I believe, since coming back from the break. And he had two assists against the Maple Leafs. He had two assists against the Sharks. So there are signs that he's maybe starting to get out of the slump. But more than the slump, it's been a hell of a month for Jake Neighbors. Yeah. Between the trades of Justin Falk and Braden Schenn. And I know, look, he's part of the team. It affects everyone. But for Jake Neighbors in particular, I think he probably took that trade of Schenn harder than others would have because of his relationship with him. When he lived with him when he first broke into the NHL, his locker was right next to his. It was right next to Schenn's, both at Enterprise Center, at Centene, sometimes on the road. They were right next to each other. They spent a ton of time together, kind of a mentor-mentee situation, and I'm sure he took that hard given the relationship that they had. And then you add on top of that receiving an A as an alternate captain after that. So it's Thomas, Parayko, and Neighbors, and then Broberg will wear an A if one of those other three guys can't play. But it's been a lot. It's been a lot for Jake Neighbors. You have the added responsibility of leadership role. You have losing a key member of the team and of his life to a trade, and then you have the slump that he's going through.
Yeah, it's been a rough month for him, but I think, you know, kind of early on, I think you hit the crux of it, right? Is that there are signs of life. You know, he's coming around. He feels like he's coming out of it. Neighbors is one of those guys who, you know, when Shen was traded, one of the first questions is who's going to be the next guy to step up? Like, not necessarily who's going to be the next captain. Like, we've had that conversation, but like, who's going to be the guy who, when you need a rally, steps up and makes a play? Who's going to be the guy when down and kind of just there's nothing going on, who's going to throw hands, you know, drop the gloves and throw hands to kind of get the boys rallied? You know, Shen was that guy. I mean, even before he was the captain, he was that guy. And now there's kind of a little bit of a hole there. And Neighbors was one of the guys who, you know, when thinking about it, was one of the guys I could see stepping up into that role as kind of a heart and soul, you know, locker room leader type. I don't, you know, not necessarily captain again, but just like that, fill that kind of void. So I'm excited to see him get going again, you know, and playing with Thomas. And, you know, now we've got Dvorsky rolling a little bit. We've got Holloway rolling a little bit. I think that's going to get kind of jolt him a little bit, get him going.
Yeah. And, you know, when I spoke to him, he mentions how much added pressure he puts on himself because of the letter, because of the leadership role. Like, this is not something that he takes lightly. And that's probably a good indication of people that should wear it. The people that should wear it should be people that take it seriously, that care about their teammates immensely. And I think those things are true of Jake Neighbors. And I don't know how much this impacts the, I guess, the future chat about him being a captain, because this is just the first step, right? This is just the first step, being an alternate captain. You're kind of feeling the weight of a letter, feeling the weight of being a conduit to the coaching staff. You know, like, it's the leadership group of Braco Thomas, Neighbors, and I think you can probably throw in the secondary group of Binnington, Broberg, Fowler. Even at times, I think you can think about Buchnevich in there as kind of a go-between between the coaching staff and the players. And it's different. And I remember talking to Braden Shen during his first year as captain, and he was kind of driving himself a little bit crazy. He was trying to do everything for everyone. He was trying to get his own game in order. He was trying to kind of be everything all at once. And it's a big step. And that's even for someone who had a ton of experience in the league, had worn letters before. Like, that was a big step for him. And it makes you to think about what the step would truly be if it was if the decision landed on Neighbors to be the next captain. And I don't know if he's quite ready for that right now.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's saying as much, right? I mean, when you talk, not directly, but just like, hey, this is a lot of responsibility. I'm taking it seriously. You know, kind of let me get some time to get my feet under me, sort of deal. And you know, I think that's totally fair. He's a young guy. A lot of talent, hasn't been in this kind of position at this level anyway, consistently before, you know, so, I think that's fair. I don't think the Blues have to name a captain, you know, right away. I think that's, I think they've got some time. And so I think he has time to grow into that role. But, you know, while you were talking about, you know, how seriously he takes it and how important it is to him, that's gotta be, I hadn't really thought about it, connecting the dots, you know, with his relationship with Shen, but that's got to be kind of a weird, bittersweet feeling, getting the added responsibility at the expense of this longtime relationship that was so important to you.
Yeah, and we got a sneak peek. I think it was the only game that both of them wore letters. It was when Pareko was out and Thomas was out, and you know, Shen and Falk were still around. So it was February 28 against the Devils. Shen was a captain still. Neighbors and Falk wore the A's. And that was the only time that, you know, Neighbors and Shen both wore a letter. And I remember talking to Shen in the days or two after that, saying, hey, like, what was it like watching Neighbors wear an A, you're giving your relationship to him? And he was glowing about him and saying, you know, I don't really take any credit for it. It's a lot of Jake, but he's someone who cares about his teammates, and he plays the game the right way. And I think you see the respect that a lot of different people in that room and organization have for Jake Nabors because of the connector that he can be. I mean, he plays cards with some of the older players. He goes to dinner with some of the younger players. He's the locker room DJ. He's the guy who handles all the pucks in warm up. He's the guy who can sometimes be sending out group texts if someone else in the organization needs something. Like, there's a lot of things that he does that gain the respect of his teammates.
So if he's the locker room DJ, do you know, like, what his greatest hits are? Like, what are we playing in the locker room?
I think the key to being a good locker room DJ is that you're kind of all over the place.
Okay.
Right.
A little bit of everything for a little bit of everyone. I get it.
Depending on the mood, right? If it's a nice sunny day in April and it's morning and you just want to come into a chill room, maybe it's some country, you know, maybe
okay.
Getting the boys going, it's a little bit more EDM or hip hop or classic okay. rock, or, you know, there are some times where I think there was one practice this year, Jim Montgomery wanted to get the energy up. And so he gave Nabors the task of being the DJ. This is one of the times where Nabors was hurt. He was hurt early on in the year. He broke a bone in his leg blocking a shot. And so he was the DJ. And I have the playlist written down somewhere in my phone, I think.
You wrote down the playlist like I used to do the top 40 on the radio in the morning on Sundays.
Yeah, yeah. It was, oh man, I got to find this now because it's going to drive me crazy. I don't think I have it anymore.
But it's wild that you led with country, though, because the country is not—it's not a hockey genre to me.
What are hockey genres? You now want to know?
I mean, I feel like rock music generally. You know, there's a lot of that.
Like some like Pantera, like the Dallas Stars do.
You could do Pantera, but I mean, I think you can do like pop punk and stuff too. A lot of teams do stuff like that, but it's not necessarily just rock. I think there's hip hop too, especially a lot of like the. You see a lot of like the boom bap stuff from the early 90s and stuff. You know, you see a lot of that in hockey, but like, I don't know that I've ever, maybe in Tulsa, but it's Tulsa, but I don't think I've ever heard a country song played at a hockey game I've been to.
Well, like not, this is like in the
no, I know, but in practice, yeah. I that's what I'm saying. I'm not in practice. So like, I can't tie country music to hockey through practice. I can only tie music to hockey through games.
Yeah, man, like this is in the dressing room. Like this is not be wouldn't be like on the ice or anything like
that. Listen, I know that you say I cover the team, but I'm not in the dressing room, so I wouldn't know.
That's what I'm clarifying for you.
I told you I'm going to have to submit one of those press credentials, see if I can get in there, see what the music's like. That's really all I want. Just a music review from the Blues locker room.
Okay, yeah. Well,
we could get Post-Dispatch entertainment reporter Jasmine, Osby in there. Jasmine's, I don't know how to pronounce Jasmine's last name, but we could get her in there, review the music.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a shot.
Nobody cares about that but me. I'm sorry.
No, I think people would care. I just don't think the locker room would be opened in that fashion.
Not only that, but like I can't fathom the Blues would give us press credentials to review a Spotify playlist inside the locker room. Before and after, like what a ridiculous concept. I can't even believe we're entertaining this on the podcast. We're serious reporters here, Matt. I cover the Blues.
You know what? As the team goes through this little spell and this transition, there's going to have to be non-traditional hockey stories being told. So we'll accept all ideas from anywhere out there.
I mean, I love it. I think that's great. You know, you talked about him being, you know, the DJ and the go-between and dinners and card games and all that stuff. Man, I know it's early and you said maybe not ready yet. And that makes sense to me, but man, that sounds like a captain to me, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely leadership qualities there. You know, I just think if you're Alex Steen coming into the summer and you have your discussions with Doug Armstrong and Jim Montgomery about that decision, whether they want to go with someone like Robert Thomas, who's the best player on the team. He's been a captain before at lower levels. He's wore a letter for a while. Since the break, he's kind of stepped up his game. I think you can see a willingness to be more vocal without those more veteran guys there. So I think you see some development and growth in his game on that side. And I wonder if they want to maybe go for that toward that kind of route, or the neighbor's route, or not naming a captain and just going with alternate captains the next however many seasons. So they do have a bunch of different options, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
I would like to throw my name in the hat for Blues captain.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't have a lot of leadership qualities, but I'm pretty good with a playlist. I like to eat and play cards. I think I'd be good at it.
You throw some parties too.
I'm not a great party throwing guy. I would come to parties. I would attend the parties, but I'm not a throw a party guy.
Party goer, not party.
I'm thrower. a party. That's right. I'm going to get that on a shirt. I like that. Party goer, not a party thrower.
Yeah, you're a goer, not a thrower.
Oh, just let's be careful with that. That could end up in a spot that I don't know that I want to go to. But yeah, it could be all right. Just keep the party in there. Party goer and party thrower. That's where we're. Just stay there. Yeah.
All right, I think that's it. I think that's it on that front. That's Nathan. I'm Matt. We'll see you later.